subtle radiations coming from the Hawking radiation, as Sussman, among others, pointed out in some detail. So the question in particular is, from the point of view of this observer, how to encode, what is the map between this radiation and the classical variables describing the impulse observed? So there's some better description now of the experience of the external observer in a quantum system that we think we understand somewhat. So I'm going to talk, say, about ADS5 comes S5 or something like this, which is dual to super Yang Mills in four dimensions. And so let me, in particular, study super Yang Mills on S3 times R at finite temperature. So this has the Penrose diagram for this. So here I'm writing down an internal black hole, which is different, with some singularity inside and some event horizons and some metrics, gs squared is equal to minus r dt squared plus r squared over plus r squared g omega 3 squared. 3, where f of r is r squared over r squared plus 1 minus r squared. Can people in the back read this? So here's the metric for an ADS black hole. If the black hole is large enough, the temperature increases with the mass of the black hole. And the issue here is that gauge theory times is essentially the same as Schwarzschild time. So let me write down the equal time slices in this background. In particular, this horizon corresponds to t goes to infinity. So from the point of view of an outside observer, an observer out here in this black hole as well as in this black hole, an infalling observer takes an infinite time to reach the horizon. And this has this makes sense from the point of view of the dual gauge theory, in that you might expect some initial excitation to slowly spread and eventually equilibrate with the background thermal bath, which in this picture is enforced. The thermal bath is represented in some sense by this thermofield double. This asymptote to two copies of S3 times R. You can think of the same copies of thermofield double as spread by all the same things. But the point is that it's very hard to see, one can ask questions, as Steve and collaborators did, about what goes on here by looking at correlation functions between the two copies. But, yes?
Here we go. I didn't like it.
That's right. Okay. Okay. Thanks. Okay, so the question, in this gauge theory, it's natural to formulate things in terms of the asymptotic observer, and then the experience of an observer falling into the black hole is hard to capture. Those classical variables seem hard to capture, and so that's what we want to try and get at today. So the question is, the main question we'll ask today is there any way we can capture the experience of infalling observer? You can also ask questions. It turns out in the model we're talking about, you can ask questions about, start to ask questions about information loss and about the singularity, although I doubt we'll get to that today. We have some speculations in our paper. Okay. I mean, there's always cookies. You can ask me about that. Okay, so first I want to talk about set up the particular system we're going to look at by looking at a class of black holes with hyperbolic horizons that were first described, I believe, by Roberto Amparan in 1999.
Mm-hmm. I just have a quick question. When you're talking about how you use kind of Schwarzschild time, and so of course that time doesn't let you see past the horizon, but why not just use some sort of ingoing Eddington coordinate?
That's precisely what we'll talk about.
All right.
Yeah, so the question is how to do that in the gauge theory.
Okay.
It's somehow really what we know about the physics seems to indicate that the sort of standard descriptions of the gauge theory propagating according to the standard Hamiltonian using variables that you would expect somehow describe the experiences of a Schwarzschild observer. So the question is, what variables do the job of describing the experiences of someone which might naturally be better described by trajectory in Eddington? Okay, so let's talk about these black holes. I will talk about them first by talking about their space-time solutions and draw some Penrose diagrams. So in general, the metric looks almost identical to the almost identical to the standard Schwarzschild black holes, with a couple exceptions. One is which here, this is the metric on, in general, hyperbolic 3 space, perhaps orbifolded by some discrete set of isometries, which lead to a compact hyperbolic space with constant negative curvature. And F is almost the same of this, except for a minus sign here. So F of R is equal to R squared over L squared minus 1 minus GM over R squared. And this fact gives you a different, somewhat rich set of possibilities for causal structures depending on the value of GM. So the first possibility is GM is less than some mu external, which is minus L squared over root 2. If note this is a negative number that I'm starting with. So for GM sufficiently negative, I just get this here is one other thing. Note here that this is conformally what I'll call sigma times R as R goes to infinity. So out here I get sigma times R, what we might call a cylinder, a static cylinder, with the base of the cylinder being the space sigma, and here is a naked singularity. This naked singularity is bad. It's the same kind of singularity you might have seen in negative mesh Schwarzschild, and as Gary and Rob Myers pointed out many years ago, these kinds of singularities are worrisome. If they existed in asymptotically flat space, they would lead to an instability because they would lead to negative mass objects at infinity. So along the way, I'll mention that these should be screened out in the gauge theory. Okay, so that's one possibility. The second possibility is right at this extremal negative value, suddenly things become more interesting. I'll draw this line here, but now the singularity is cloaked behind a double horizon. This is the continuation of the extremal ADS variant of the extremal Reister-Nordström black hole. So this here describes, this is t goes to minus infinity here, and t goes to infinity here. The third set of possibilities is when GM remains negative, but greater than this extremal value here, and then this just becomes the ADS variant of Reister-Nordström. With an outer horizon and an inner horizon. And so again, this is t from minus infinity to infinity, but there are additional there are additional asymptotic regions as you go through the black hole. And finally, for GM greater than or equal to zero, the Penrose diagram just becomes that, becomes Schwarzschild-like with a space-like singularity and a horizon. Right at GM is equal to zero, as we'll describe, this singularity is actually an orbifold singularity like the BTZ black hole. But for greater masses, this becomes a standard black hole singularity.
Is that unstable in the usual way?
Yes, there's an instability in the inner horizon. It's just standard. It looks there, just looks like standard Reisner Nordström.
The marginal case has exactly the same diagram as GM. I mean, GM equals zero has exactly the same diagram as GM greater than zero?
Yeah, I don't. The singularity might bow in a little. I'm not actually sure.
In that case or something?
No, it's based like right at GM equals zero. I'll show you another way to look at that. Shortly. So before talking about that, I want to talk a little bit about what the dual gauge, what we think the dual gauge theory looks like. So here's the dual gauge theory. Should be given what this metric asymptotes to, namely singular times R, it's natural to expect that the dual gauge theory lives on this four-dimensional space, hyperbolic space times time. You expect, I call this super Yang-Mills, of course, the curvature you expect to break supersymmetry. But also, because of the negative curvature, the dynamics is a little interesting. So I'll have a trace f squared plus d phi squared plus phi phi squared. I'm suppressing all the R charge indices. But there's also a minus here. R4 is the curvature of the four-dimensional the four-dimensional metric. When I look at S3 times R, this gives the scale. It's well known that this gives the scalar fields a positive mass, but in this case, it gives the scalar fields a tachyonic mass. Now, when you look at this, all of the Klutze-Klein modes of the scalar field remain stable. It's only the zero modes that are unstable, and they feel an inverted harmonic oscillator potential. So if I look here at the zero modes, here's phi, here's v of phi, this is phi of t, so it depends only on t and not on any of the coordinates of the hyperbolic space, and this goes, roughly speaking, as minus 1 over 2 l squared phi squared. If I just pick, say, a particular eigenvalue of this adjoint scalar field, as the eigenvalue gets very, very large, this corresponds to going out onto the Coulomb branch. And the quartic terms, this will be solved if these commute. So if I go out on the Coulomb branch, I take one scalar field out and then have to set the other one so that this is zero. But if I look at a single eigenvalue way out here, it should look like this. Of course, as you get into the origin, as we'll describe, you expect corrections with the zero at finite temperature. But far out along the Coulomb branch, you expect very small corrections. Now, this is an inverted harmonic oscillator potential, so in particular, it takes an infinite time to get out to infinity. So this should still describe well-defined quantum mechanics as long as you ask sensible questions, build wave packets, and scatter them, and so on and so forth. It's not like the kinds of instabilities one saw in these other constructions of singularities where one added some irrelevant operator that was cubic and you went out to infinity in finite time and you needed a self-adjoint extension and so forth. This is somewhat different than that. Secondly, as we'll argue, the singularity of the black hole will be naturally associated with the origin rather with large values of the fields. So in this case, one can study, in fact, the formation of black holes by taking the scalar fields here can be taken to represent the positions of D3 brains wrapped on sigma and moving in R. And so you can smear them out over the S5 and describe a spherical shell form black holes by sending in a spherical shell. By spherical, I mean smeared out over the S5 of D3 brains, say, of ND3 brains. Described by, say, some phi of t, which is m string squared r of t, where r is the position of the brain in the corresponding background.
What are the indications that this is a dual gauge
theory? One indication is that, as I'll argue in a minute, we can get, for the m equals zero black hole, we can get this gauge theory by starting with a particular slicing of Poincaré ADS and orbital folding. That's probably the quick and dirty version.
But can't you also just study the dynamics of a probe B3
brain? You can study the dynamics of a probe B3 brain and try to argue that it looks like this. The sort of one loop calculations that one does in flat space are a little bit harder because of the curvature of the spatial slices, so we haven't done that.
Are there other solutions where you play off the negative quadratic against the quartic and get a stable static configuration?
Not that I know of. No. I don't. Not that I know, but I haven't thought of it. So in doing this, in studying the spherical shells, you might expect that the spherical shell will come in and bounce off. And whether it does and what happens depends, in fact, on the energy of the spherical shell. So here is an energy corresponding to mu x. Here's the energy equals zero. And you can make some statements about what happens as I raise the energy of the spherical shell. But before doing this, let me just note that if I look at this action and don't worry about the quantum corrections to the equations of motion, so without quantum corrections, I can write a solution phi of t is phi 0 times cosh t over L for energies less than 0 and phi 0 sinh T over L for energies greater than 0. So for energies less than 0, this just describes a bounce. For energies greater than 0, it looks like you would sail over the top. But in fact, you know that you expect that there should be quantum corrections. In particular, as phi gets smaller and smaller, W bosons connecting the different brains get lighter and lighter. First, their loops start to become important. Then they might get produced. In addition, you start to worry about exciting Klutze-Klein modes along sigma, various Wilson-Lind degrees of freedom along sigma, because this has some complicated topology, and so forth. So we'll concentrate first on what happens when you start considering the loops of W bosons.
Can I ask you, Don, your label of the point ux on that diagram? I just want to understand what you meant when you labeled that. I mean,
this corresponds to this is some energy. So I'm rescaling this, so this is really describing a shell of brains. And this corresponds to v here has units of energy. So I'm going to ask, what happens when I send in, here's v of phi. What happens when I send in a shell of brains at less, great, more than this energy or less than this energy?
This has been calibrated by doing a bulk D3 brain calculation. I measured their energy.
Yeah, that's right.
I compared the black hole, so I know that the scale is the same.
That's right. One other thing about this spherical. If I look out at infinity, I'll send in this spherical shell. It might go in, it might bounce back out. But one thing to say is outside of the spherical shell, it will look like locally like ADS space, but the D brains screen the Ramon-Ramon charge inside the shell, and so I expect lambda equals zero inside, just like when I take brains out, spherical shells of brains out into the Coulomb branch in Poincaré ADS.
It certainly is by the tenth bullet in the big.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. So, yeah, sphere means S5. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about. Incredible. Thank you. Okay, so I get corrections from W bosons, both from integrating them out and from if I'm far enough in from production. From KK modes on sigma Wilson lines, et cetera. I'm going to focus for now on the effects of integrating out the W bosons that will actually dominate the physics near the horizon, as I'll argue in a minute.
How do you define the Green's functions for theory?
How do I define the Green functions for this? There is no well-defined vacuum state in this theory. You just have to set up this. The excitations can have, depending on the value of phi, the W bosons and the excitations could, if this was moving slowly, live in some adiabatic vacuum. But in terms of the zero modes, you just have to define some state, some wave packet or something like that. There's not a well-defined vacuum state. This energy is unbounded below.
So, I mean, all the quantum corrections will be prescription-dependent here, then?
Well, it will depend on the, in detail on the state, on the state that you start with. That's all. Well, I imagine, for example, some wave packet for these brains coming in from infinity and bouncing out. With all the other, I would start out here with all of, out here, the W bosons are highly massive, and it's reasonable to write down the W bosons, includes the Klein modes, et cetera, in some sort of adiabatic vacuum.
All the brains are out there.
Yeah, that's right. In this case, all the brains are out there when I'm looking at this collapsing spherical shell. When some of them are at the origin, you have to think harder.
Still doing a single eigenvalue dynamic?
Sorry, say that.
You're doing a single brain shell falling in?
Right now, I'm just looking at all N brains falling in to describe the formation of the black hole. I'll also talk about probe brains when the black hole has been formed. In fact, I'll talk about that right now to give a sense of, in general, to solve this, you have to look at the supergravity. You have to match these two solutions. This turns out to be complicated, and we don't know a solution except for the case where the brains come in with zero energy to form the M equals zero black hole. But we can start to get a sense of when these are important by looking at the action of a probe brain in these in the corresponding black hole backgrounds at these masses, and just asking what the probe brain sees. It gives you some sense of when the corrections are important. I can write, to take into account the effect of the W bosons, I can write the DBI action corresponding to taking a single brain out and studying its dynamics, and the integrating out the W bosons connecting the single brain to all of the other brains. And one expects, just from supergravity, if we that it will have the following action, G string alpha prime cubed. V hat is just the volume of this hyperbolic 3 space in units of the ADS radius. And then there's a dt r cubed, some overall minus sign here actually, f of r minus r dot squared over f. And then actually there's a minus r to the fourth minus r horizon to the fourth over l here. This comes from the Wessamino term induced by the four-form potential. The first thing to note is at large r, S looks like dt 1/2 r dot squared plus 1 over 2 l squared r squared. As you would expect, it is a single quantum variable moving in an inverted harmonic oscillator potential. If you just expand this out at large r, you'll get this in a negative mass squared term here. You want me to write that higher? Okay. So something else to note is that as R goes to what I would call R horizon, this F of R is corresponds to the F that described the black hole metric that I just erased. But as R goes to R horizon, F of R goes to zero. When you study dynamics of these DBI action, there's a scalar speed limit set by the value of R dot for which the square root vanishes. So we expect R dot to be less than F. So R dot goes to zero as the brain approaches the horizon corresponding, which is how DBI is telling you that it's taking you an infinite amount of time to get to the horizon from the point of view of the Schwarzschild observer. So it takes infinite Schwarzschild time, or its final time to reach horizon. But furthermore, if you expand, if you tried to expand S in small fluctuations, delta R, around some classical trajectory, because of this F in the denominator, you'll find this expansion goes very bad. You'll find it'll go something like delta R dot squared to the 2n over F to the 2n minus 1. And for example, if you normalize the quadratic term, you'll find that so that the normalization is canonical, all the higher order terms will get larger and larger. So these variables are becoming very, very strongly coupled at the horizon, telling you that there's probably, if you really want to describe something that's acting classical near the horizon, you should choose another set of variables. Okay, let me make a couple other points about the importance of quantum corrections and the origin of field space before I move on. Are there any other questions? I guess we'll just, in this audience, I shouldn't have to ask that question. Okay, so more generally, we expect loops to be important, loops of W bosons are important when lambda, this is a Tüft coupling, phi dot over phi squared, is of order 1. So let me talk about this in the context of these incoming spherical shells. You can start to get at least some guess as to when this is important by plugging in the uncorrected trajectories and start to see where you expect the corrections to become important. When you do that for E less than mu x, the loops are always suppressed. So if you tried to actually realize these naked singularities in the gauge theory, the only way to lower the energy of the gauge theory below zero is via the scalar field. So I send in some shell of scalar fields with energy less than mu x. When I do that, inside the shell, the cosmological constant is zero, and it's reasonable to suppose that there's no naked singularity there, although I confess we haven't found a solution. But the only way to lower the energy, again, there's no solution corresponding to this being ADS all the way up to the naked singularity. The only way to lower the energy is through the scalar field sector, and the scalar fields will bounce because the corrections aren't important.
The statement that this correction is not important is something that you're reading off of this bulk action or something that you did
say? So this is where DBI kinds of corrections are important, or loop corrections more generally. So if they're not important, the trajectory should be well described by the class of this classical action, particularly these classical trajectories. So just as a consistency check, I plug this in to this criterion. And as long as the loops are suppressed when this is less than 1, and as long as the energy is less than this extremal energy, that's true.
So just emphasize, I mean, there's an interesting coincidence here.
Right.
If you do a field theory, purely field theory calculation of when these loops, when these EVI corrections become important,
right.
you get a certain negative energy.
Yes.
Right. What you then notice is exactly this sort of
exactly this extremal energy. Yes.
Is it exactly the same, or is that the same order, or?
We haven't worked out the coefficient, so of order one, within order one. Yeah, but this energy is of order n, so it's a...
Order n?
N squared.
N squared.
Yeah. So...
These are TUF coupling corrections. These aren't one over n corrections. These are...
TUF coupling corrections. They're small because phi squared is typically large.
So you're expecting... These are alpha prime corrections that are healing this, if I understand correctly. From the gravity point of view, this could happen at n equals infinity, or
Yes, I think this is going to happen at n equals infinity. So this is that's right.
That's the idea.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so this is alpha prime corrections that are for the gravity side that are going to take care of this.
Well, so far.
So far, yeah. I think that's for these naked singularities, yes.
You're talking about DBI corrections. Are you talking about the brain?
If I was to, for example, expand this out in powers of R dot.
You have an action for some infalling brain, and you have the dual gauge three action, and I don't see
that. The action for the infalling brain should be induced by the dual gauge three action by integrating out W bosons. The higher order corrections turn out to be higher order terms. If I expand this out in R dot, turn out to be the higher order terms. So it's the R dot to the fourth, R dot, et cetera, terms, which correspond to those the loop corrections, and they're the corrections which come from going from this action to the from the quadratic action for a single scalar field to the DBI action. Yes.
I'm missing something. So you showed the first particular class of states that you want to consider.
Uh-huh.
You don't form the naked singularity. But that doesn't show up since the field theory doesn't have a ground state.
Why field theory doesn't have a ground state. I'm just saying that if I try to lower the energy below this, I have to lower the energy in the scalar field sector. And if I lower the energy in the scalar field sector, I'll screen the cosmological constant inside that collapsing shell. And it's reasonable to assume that that solution won't have the naked singularity.
I'm still missing something. Lower energy with respect to what?
Lower the energy of the gauge theory. So you can map this energy to an asymptotic mass in ADS. And I'm saying that the energies below here correspond to an asymptotic mass which is lower than this bound above which you had black holes. But the only way to get the energy of the gauge theory down there is to lower it in the scalar field sector. Everything else is stable. Everything else has positive energy.
You're going to show a dual frame.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
If one could, quantize the sigma model with this target for small enough, for energies below the mu at lower than mu x,
right?
Would you guess that actually alpha prime corrections, if we could compute them, would smooth out the singularity? And
well, I don't. I mean, it's not that like the singularity is there and there's this. I don't know what it looks like here. It's not clear that it's that the singularity is here and it's just highly curved. But
this is an enhanced-on-like mechanism.
Right? Yeah, this is an enhanced-on-like
it's
mechanism.
Just flat space regional
singularity. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But it is true that this does look like it corresponds to alpha prime physics. So. But actually, it's sort of the other way. So the real statement is this: the alpha prime physics starts to kick in at higher energies. So let me describe that before going on. For mu greater than mu x, DBI corrections are important, by which I mean that this criterion kicks in when phi is of order m string squared rh, where this is the horizon of the black hole at that energy. So if I try to send in the spherical shell here, I never actually reach the bounds. Instead, things start to slow down at a value where I approach the horizon. So you can start to see some interesting map between the sort of the different causal structures of the black hole and the phases of the scalar field dynamics. Down here, the scalar field bounces. This corresponds to the screening of this naked singularity. As I raise the energy above this, the scalar field starts to feel loop corrections and slow down where the horizon is. When I start looking at energies above zero, the causal structure of the black hole changes, and I get these black holes with space-like singularities. So nice sort of map between some, like, phases of the dynamics here and phases of space-time over there. One last comment before I go on, just to get to the heart of this talk. Is just a comment about the origin of field space, which I can only access when I look at scalar fields at energies greater than zero. So for this collapsing spherical shell, I access the origin of field space precisely, I start to access this precisely when the causal structure has a space-like singularity. And furthermore, I'll argue in a minute that this, in fact, this origin should correspond in some sense to that space-like singularity. To set that up, let me just note that for these collapsing shells, I can measure the mass of the W bosons connecting the different brains in this shell, and I need to make some reasonably physical statement. I want to compare the mass of the W bosons to some other scale. A natural scale, for example, would be the Kaluza-Klein scale, but which I mean the inverse size of the hyperbolic slicing, the modes of the momentum, the scale of the momentum modes of the gauge theory. And this is going to zero because this is fixed. The hyperbolic space isn't changing with time, but the mass of the W bosons is going to zero. Okay, so all of that, let me go back, and I'm going to get the zero mass black hole in a different way. So first I'm going to start by looking at an orbifold of ABS. So let me start with Poincaré coordinates.
Okay, can I interrupt for a second? And what is the value of that energy is above the threshold energy when you pass the putative horizon?
Depends on the horizon. I would say for the M equals zero black holes of order one, and it's a little larger for larger black holes of the horizon that's farther out. MW is roughly the value of the scalar field in string units, and at the horizon, MW gets larger and larger for larger and larger mass black holes because the horizon is farther and farther out.
So you're thinking over a very large mass black hole, MW is at the horizon is really big, and you don't expect to inflate it.
You expect it to flow in loops because the TEV coupling is big. So this kind of ratio is still order one. That counts loop kind of, but I don't expect to produce them at the horizon.
Could you fix the TEV coupling and then make the temperature of the black hole huge and ignore the W boson loops? That's a little bit weird.
Horizon.
TEV coupling, very, very large temperature.
Confused. You certainly got a large temperature.
This will always be important.
I think this is always important at the horizon if I'm careful.
So there'll be some other parameter that if you're more careful making the estimate.
Yeah, if you're more careful making the estimate, you also have to take this into account.
So the five chunks. Okay. That's another.
I think that's right.
Sorry.
No, it's a good question. So let me look at Poincaré coordinates for ADS. I'll start with plus drp squared over rp squared times l squared plus other stuff. This, of course, is just the metric on R4. Here, this is a Poincaré slicing of ADS. These are the Poincaré horizons. These are constant beta and then constant rp. Now, the first thing we're going to do is write a patch of this patch by looking at a patch of Minkowski space, namely a patch corresponding to the backward light cone at some point. You can write down coordinates for that. So if I, here's the Minkowski diagram for R4, or the Penrose diagram for R4, and I can look at this patch here and describe that patch by Tp squared plus Tp squared d sigma bar squared root. This is the metric on H3. That covers this region here. And so if I write, this is the flat metric written in null coordinates. If I put this metric into here, this metric will cover, say, this patch of Poincaré down here. And so the claim is that gauge theory on this space will describe string type 2B string theory in this part of ADS. So I write ds squared is equal to rp squared over l squared minus dtp squared, dp squared d sigma bar squared, sigma bar, plus l squared drp squared over rp squared. And finally, I can take this space and replace this just with d sigma by orbital folding along the hyperbolic slices with respect to the same discrete group that I used to define sigma earlier. And so now I get one other note. When I orbifold by gamma, when I don't do the orbifold, this is just a fake singularity. It's a coordinate singularity. But when I actually do the orbifold, this three-dimensional space here has finite volume, and these finite volume slices are going to zero volume here, honestly going to zero volume, and this becomes a real honest-to-God singularity. In particular, this now becomes a real honest-to-God singularity. So now I have gauge theory on this space, minus dtp squared plus tp squared d sigma squared, describing this region here. In particular, it naturally seems to look right into the singularity.
Gauge theory is on a singular space itself.
The gauge theory itself is on a singular space. Right. To get to the horizon, if you want to ask questions about the horizon, as I'll argue in a minute, that's at just some finite value of T and R, and nothing strange is going on. So we can at least push the questions about the singularity off. Now, there are static coordinates describing this background, and I can get to them by writing R is equal to RP PP over L, and T is equal to L over 2. Log RP squared minus log of the fourth over plus one. And in these static coordinates, the metric just becomes one that is we've already seen, namely the zero mass black hole. So one reason one might have worried about these kinds of orbital foldings is they introduce the gauge theory as singular, but there is another presentation of the spacetime which we're more inclined to trust, which is the spacetime of a zero mass black hole with a horizon. This we know was these coordinates are well described by the gauge theory on this cylinder at finite temperature. But they're related by this transformation to the gauge theory on this collapsing cone at zero temperature.
Well, gauge theory is a conformal mapping from the cylinder to...
The cylinder to the cone is itself a conformal mapping. As I'll argue in a second, this is a bit more than a conformal mapping.
Yeah.
in the bucket is a diffeomorphism.
It's a diffeomorphism, but let me talk about that in a minute. Very soon. But let me just say a few things about gauge theory on the collapsing cone, and then talk about the and finish up by talking about the transformation. So, on collapsing cone. So the first statement is that R is equal to zero, so there's no potential for the scalar field within the super Yang mills. The classical solutions are phi is equal to what I'll call a constant mode plus a mode which goes as 1 over tp squared. This constant mode is just the image of the brains in Poincaré coordinates at constant radial Poincaré radial slices. And those are actually a solution to the full Yang mill, so we expect this solution at least to survive DBI corrections. You can write the DBI action. For a single probe, and study questions like when do you expect loop effects to become important by asking when do higher order terms in the DBI action become important. So again, the DBI action, these terms never go away. Now there's a DTP because I'm TP cubed RP cubed over L square root squared over L squared minus dot squared over p squared, and then there's a minus r to the fourth tp cubed over l cubed to the fourth, I think. Okay, so this is the DBI action for if I take a single brain far out on the Coulomb branch corresponding to some probe brain far out here moving in. Here's the horizon. Entering the horizon, the horizon is at RP TP is equal to L squared. So for a generic T sub P, R sub P isn't particularly large, and nothing particularly special happens at the horizon according to this DBI action. In particular, the expansion in small fluctuations is perfectly good. So this is a good set of classical variables to describe falling through the horizon. Finally, let me say just one or two things about the behavior as TP goes to zero. So as T sub P goes to zero, the first comment is that fluctuations get large. So this corresponds for, say, a brain moving at a constant radial coordinate, just moving right into the singularity. At TP equals to zero, fluctuations get large. You can see this by noting that there's this T sub P factor out here, which looks like a 1 over 8, T sub P cubed, which looks like 1 over H bar. And so that's getting large. But on the other hand, now in this case, when we measure MW over MKK, phi, if phi is constant, the W mass isn't changing, but the Klutze-Klein modes are getting very, very heavy. So this ratio goes to zero. This ratio goes to zero when the brain hits the singularity. And so it's on this basis that we speculate that similarly, eigenvalues hitting the origin should also be associated with the singularity.
It's actually pretty similar to this known space that appears in the matrix Greek dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
But also it looks like probably sort of zero at this and that.
Right.
But there is a one loop potential.
There is for those, as you get to the origin, I expect all sorts of horrible things to happen. Absolutely, because at that point, the Klutze-Klein modes are, you expect to start exciting Klutze-Klein modes because of the change in the time dependence of the space-time, Wilson lines will become important, and things like that. So all bets are off near the singularity. What we would like to argue is that at least near the horizon, nothing, I wouldn't say all bets are off, but it's hard near the singularity. But near the horizon, nothing's fine, it's going on. And that's the main lesson that we take away.
I think you saw that even far away. Small effect. if you can compute them.
You can get small effects, but I think the DBI action from the classical action is pretty good as long as you're far away. And I think there'll be big effects. You're way out on the Coulomb branch, so anything you want to integrate out that's connected to the probe is very heavy. Okay, so let me finish up by talking a bit now about the transformation in the field theory between these two descriptions. Can I go 5 minutes past? I think we started a bit late.
Take all the time you want.
Okay. Okay, so space-time coordinate transformation in the quantum field theory. Let me make a first note about conformal transformations. So consider gauge theory on this space. If I make the following coordinate transformation, Tp is minus L log minus Tp over L, ds squared is Tp squared over L squared times minus dt tilde squared plus d sigma squared. So it's conformally equivalent to the static cylinder. So now I can make a conformal transformation. So I let ds, let me call this ds tilde squared. Yes, tilde squared, I define r tilde is equal to minus tp over l r sub p. This is the corresponding conformal transformation of the scalar field described by r. And so we know that this is just a conformal transformation, so this takes super Yang-Mills on the collapsing cone to super Yang-Mills on the cylinder, or the circle means hyperbolic space. So this is just a conformal transformation. It takes super Yang-Mills to this on super Yang-Mills to this. So it's fair to ask, is all you need to do to look behind the horizon a conformal transformation? The problem, it would be, on the other hand, it would be surprising, because if I look at this as a coordinate transformation, and I start, say, with Poincaré, this coordinate transformation transforms t and rescales r, but it doesn't change the time slicing. Furthermore, when you take this coordinate transformation and rescaling of r and apply it to this action, you don't get the DBI action in Schwarzschild coordinates. For example, it won't make the horizon singular in any way. Instead, you'll get some other action. I can write so this I'll call star. So star plus double star on SDVI on the cone in the slice of Poincaré coordinates will give me something else I'll call S tilde, which will go as dt tilde times r tilde cubed times root r tilde squared over L squared minus root over r tilde squared times r tilde dot plus 1 over L r tilde squared, and so forth. This looks fine near the horizon. This does describe a theory which is living in some sense on the cylinder. So, but it's just a repack. It's another way you can set of coordinates you can use to see behind the horizon. But it's not Schwarzschild. So to implement the coordinate transformation, what we want to do is to implement this coordinate transformation, which I wish I could say I left this there by design. I'll take what I can get. What we want to do is implement this coordinate transformation. And if you think about R as a scalar field, if you think about R scalar field, this looks fine. This is just a conformal transformation. For large enough R, this is just at leading order in 1 over R. That transformation is just this transformation. But as R gets in towards the horizon, higher and higher order terms start to matter. And in particular, this is a reparameterization of T, which depends on the fields. Now, that's kind of a weird thing to do in general in field theory, but we do this kind of thing in theories with gravity, in particular when one does changes of gauge. And so when you're studying fluctuations during inflation, those changes of gauge often involve changing the time slicing in a way indexed by the value of the inflaton. And you can do that because of the reparameterization invariant. So what I'll do is introduce a new reparameterization and a new gauge invariance, a world volume reparameterization invariance by promoting T to a field. And now I can write S dBi is equal to d tau tp dot tp cubed rp cubed root rp squared over l squared tp dot minus rp dot squared over tp dot squared rp squared. And in general, this is d tau times tp dot rp cubed tp cubed. This is just the volume times the determinant of g mu nu x mu dot. So where mu and nu, in this case, range over tp and rp. So this transforms quite nicely, in fact, covariantly under coordinate transformations of in spacetime. But now, once I've promoted this to a field, this is just a field redefinition. So I get back to the usual dBi action, to dBi in what we call a Poincaré by gauge fixing, tp is equal to tau. Okay. On the other hand, I can use this coordinate transformation to get the dBi action in Schwarzschild. This transforms covariantly. That's what you're going to get. And then after gauge fixing, T is equal to tau. So the two are related by coordinate transformation and gauge fixings.
I mean, this is very problematic. If you put field theory on a singular space like this, the symmetry you're trying to use is broken explicitly by the background. By the singularity. You can see this in one very explicit.
I think that at finite end, the singularity is merely reflecting the infinity, the fact that this goes as t goes to infinity, to start with. I think at finite end, this is fine.
This precisely.
Look, it doesn't matter. We never need to introduce the singular space for the field theory, and I think that's a difference.
Yes. We could start from here.
Everything on the static cylinder.
Right.
And what Alvin is saying is that there are different time slices of the black hole. The M equals zero black hole can be described in Schwarzschild time slices. It can be described in these Poincaré-like time slices. And both of those are described in the field theory on the static cylinder. And they're related by this field-dependent time reparameterization.
Right.
So we don't have to.
So you can avoid
time slicing the cover.
Yeah.
Well, all these functions go bad at the singularity anyway. We're not
claiming anything about the singularity. What we're really interested in what goes on near the horizon for right now. I can, but certainly that issue already comes, as Gary said, by looking at this action and comparing it to the usual Schwarzschild dBi action. I could have gone in the other way.
Right. I mean, what we found was the physics of Dan Mills on a singular space away from the singularity knows about the singularity. And the coupling to background metrics and so on and the reparameterizations you wanted to get broken by the singularity.
Okay, but I don't have to at least look at Yang-Mills on the singular space to ask these questions. I can work with this action.
Complications.
What?
multiplications. That's his point.
The TVI sums them up.
So TVI sums them up.
Some of them.
Yeah.
The ones that matter here.
That's wishful thinking.
What?
You say that the TVI sums them up?
If you believe the gauge gravity duality, it sums them up, which I do. So you can look. This corresponds to a non-trivial transformation of the quantum variables, for example. You can look at how the conjugate momenta transform and the constraints relating the T and R conjugate momenta, and write down a formula for them, and the transformation is non-trivial. Instead of writing those down, I just want to close with one other comment. Now, as I said before, on the one hand, super Yang mills on this space is related to super Yang mills on this space by a conformal transformation. On the other hand, it's certainly true that the DBI actions away from the singularity are not related by such a conformal transformation, so you might ask what's going on. One possibility is that when I actually calculate, say, the DBI action here, the DBI action is an effective action I get by integrating a W bosons. To do that, I have to fix a gauge. The form of the DBI action will depend on the gauge as long as the physics that you extract at the end of the day is, of course, independent of gauge. But the effective action, the functional form of the effective action, can certainly depend on gauge. So I might, say, pick some background gauge condition. G is d mu for the fluctuations. This is phi bar delta phi. And I pick this as my background field gauge, but it turns out that this gauge condition is not invariant under the conformal transformations. So if the DBI action on this space corresponded to looking at the effective action in background field gauge, and the DBI action on this space corresponded to the effective action in background field gauge, then transforming either of these by conformal transformation won't take the corresponding DBI actions into each other. So if that's true, there's some sense in which this kind of, you might want to know, how do I take this and lift this kind of transformation to the underlying field theory? And it seems possible that in the underlying field theory, it's a change of gauge, by which I mean with respect to the UN gauge invariance of the theory. So there might be some relation, which is interesting, between the UN gauge invariance and the sort of combined world volume and space-time reparameterization invariance. This is only a suggestion, so I don't want to make too much of it, but I find it interesting. So I'm now really out of time, so I'll just stop and ask more questions. Yes?
Field theory of really mapping conformally from one space to another. And then there are two issues. One is the DBI action was never conformally invariant. So it's true that
that's right.
You will not get the DBI action
that's right.
back
right.
by conformal transformation.
That's right. That's what I just said.
Other thing that
but the field theory is conformally invariant in some sense. So you want to know what's the story. This is actually, we weren't the first person to come up with this kind of story. This is an issue with special conformal transformations. When you look at the DBI action is not invariant under the standard field theoretic special conformal transformations. It's invariant under a modified set of special conformal transformations, as Juan wrote down. But those modified transformations aren't invariants of the original Yang-Mills action. So the suggestion by Yavitsky, Unea, and a third author I don't remember was that it's precisely that the background field gauge is not invariant under the special conformal transformations, and in fixing the gauge transformation you do in fixing that up, if you do a combined special conformal transformation plus that gauge transformation, they checked at one loop that the effective action is invariant. So this is in that spirit.
I mean, that argument is wrong at high loops.
Is it meant to be wrong?
Right.
Is it? We haven't.
It's the wrong effective action from the.
Is it
Yang-Mills effective action with the DBI effective action, a weak coupling?
Uh-huh.
It just disagrees.
Why would you compare it to weak coupling? It's a large lambda.
No, their argument was not large lambda. Their argument was.
If I look at.
The DBI action is valid at weak coupling, weak curvature, as long as the probe is moving at small acceleration. That's a very well defined statement.
That's certainly believed to be true. There are some additional field redefinitions of phi you have to do by itself, which Juan talked about at finite temperature. But I think, I believe that these two have matched in an ancient that I've never found.
These corrections are the zero
boundary. Right. I mean, it's just, in some sense, it should be true. It's a statement of gauge gravity duality. You believe them at strong coupling because, at least out at large R, the correct expansion parameter for integrating out the W bosons is lambda over MW squared. And so as long as MW is large, this is a good expansion parameter.
Let me see if I understood your upshot correctly. So if we say that by conformal transformation on the boundary, we can see beyond the horizon.
In some sense, if you want to write down a good set of variables, which is classical, and seeing behind the horizon, it's the gauge theory argument would be it's a combination of conformal transformation and a change of gauge. Just the conformal transformation will give you, say, starting with the Schwarzschild action, another action which will break down at the horizon. Just the conformal transformation won't change that. But a field-dependent reparameterization will. Yes. Or you can just start in Poincaré.
And that's just the standard gauge theory in Poincaré.
And you're using the standard action, which doesn't go bad as you go through the horizon.
Right.
Okay, so then I have a question. But the event horizon as seen by observers on the field theory, on the cone, and on the cylinder are different.
No, the event horizon is at the same place. The physics looks different. That's what we expect from complementarity.
This is not true. This can't be true.
It is true.
This is not true even for sort of conformal mapping of Schwarzschild in global coordinates to Poincaré. The event horizon as seen by the Poincaré slicing is not where the global event horizon is.
That's different.
This is different. Yeah.
This is different.
Different because there's no horizon in Poincaré coordinates, in essence.
The Poincaré
coordinates, it looks like some time-dependent, you know, space-time. And so there's no obvious horizon there. The coordinates cover everything. But the fact is there is this hidden sort of time translation symmetry, which is made manifest by going to these other coordinates, and then it is a black hole. Is
that with a global event, with an honest global event horizon. This is very different from the usual global to Poincaré coordinate transformations that you usually do. Yes?
So I'd like to say one thing. I maybe a slightly different way of thinking about this. I mean, so Alvin spent a lot of time talking about this M equals zero case, where everything's worked out explicitly and all of this. But we believe this mechanism works for all ADS black holes. Okay, so what's the basic sort of general story? And conformal transformation is not the key. I mean, in general, I don't think you need to mention conformal transformation.
Yes.
You start with the CFT on your boundary, and it naturally gives you sort of the DBI in this usual Schwarzschild coordinates. What you want to do to get behind the horizon is to change your time slicing in the bulk. The way you change your time slicing in the bulk is to change t to a new time plus some function of r. That's the way these coordinate transformations always work. But r is just your scalar field in the boundary theory. So in the boundary theory, what you do is a time reparameterization. You have to change your time in a way that depends on the field. So it's a field-dependent time reparameterization. And for me, that's the key idea. The conformal transformation was useful here to get to some other Poincaré description that we understood. It's not going to be useful in general, because we don't have Poincaré descriptions for black holes in general.
Right.
But so it's just, you know, doing this time reparameterization is the key.
Yeah, the only reason I brought up conformal transformations at all was to point out this puzzle. There might be some other gauge theory reason.
So then for Predator Hover, suppose you wanted to recover more than DBI action for three Brayton shells. Suppose you wanted, in principle, study all kinds of things behind the would you think that it's useful enough to do a reparameterization of time that depends only on this particular field, phi, or should it depend on all the fields of the Yang?
Well, that we do. In the end, there should be a transformation which, you know, allows you to describe, you know, gravitational waves and things like that, which propagate behind the horizon. At least for me, and that's why I'm interested in this sort of underlying gauge theory description. Otherwise, you know, if you want, you could try to talk about non-abelian DBI if you want to talk about more brains and things like that. But at some point, you need the full gauge theory transformation. This is, at least for me, the one hint I've seen of that.
Along that line, I mean, what's remarkable about this, your suggestion is, you know, I guess it's the orthodoxy now, is that let's take the case that Gary's mentioning, the ordinary high temperature Super Yang-Mills theory, not this rather special case. You know, our, I think the orthodoxy is that that theory is kind of as random as it could be. It's a high-temperature ergodic thing, but gluons are moving on as crazy trajectories as they can possibly move.
Right.
And the transformation you're suggesting will straighten that out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it says that as something that's as random as can be, a formula you could write in, well, I guess maybe for the full set of n-squared gluons, it's complicated. But a rather simple formula can straighten out that randomness.
Right. Well, I might.
Now, as it's true that the picture of the Penrose diagram says
it's probably what
should
happens.
Be able to fall through. But that's remarkable to have that power to straighten out that randomness.
Right. Well, the question is
that you can write on a.
Right. The question might be.
Board. What?
The question might be choosing the right thing, because it might seem a little less strange if you went the just guessing if you went the other way. Start with some trajectory which is nice and classical and some variable, and then do some random change of variables like this.
Well,
it might look then
change of variables not very random.
This particular, but let me just pick some random change, like some huge change of gauge or something like that, and then it might look really bad in those other coordinates.
But I mean, are you going to have to pick a? Are you going to have to sort of pick a random change of variable, something that's? I mean, it's. I wonder if it says that the theory isn't quite as random as we thought, or something. I mean, the fact that you can pass through the horizon is.
Well, in some sense that is what you're saying. You thought that this thing formed by some unitary process. And,
unitary but complicated. I mean,
unitary but complicated process, right?
Quite complicated.
Okay. I don't choose to straighten out this randomness. I mean,
right.
From
okay,
the whole point of view, right? The thermal equilibrium is reached at large affine parameters along the horizon. This stuff is shooting through the horizon and going down to what would be the classical singularity, right? Isn't the process of hitting singularity still going to look complicated in the gauge theory?
That's true. We can't get away from that strong coupling.
At the horizon, I think.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
The
ball reached equilibrium at the horizon. It reached equilibrium at large times along the horizon.
No, but we could just talk about the eternal black hole, right?
But no, I think it's true that it largely what you see from the point of view of the bulk is this thing spreading, eventually becoming of order the thermal wavelength and starting to equilibrate. You'll start to equilibrate strongly in some finite time. And you don't see that kind of complicated scrambling process for the enfolding observer when the field values have that same, when the field values correspond to some degrees of freedom localized near the horizon. I can talk about something near the horizon in two different sets of variables. One set of variables is going to look complicated. I think that's true, that in one set of variables it will look complicated, and the other set of variables it will look classical.
But I mean, could it be maybe like, you know, in DBI action, that sort of one degree of freedom out of n squared?
Right.
You know, that you have a very simple change of variables. You've given it essentially explicitly, right. Maybe, I mean, explicitly,
yeah.
Those are formulas.
Yeah.
But then as you consider more and more multi-point things,
right.
Non-abelian things, eventually things get more and more complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, could it be that there's some way you're interpolating between the two? And, I mean, you've given a sort of a way, if you want to study one probe,
right.
A way to do it. Quite explicitly, and only as you ask more and more subtle questions, life gets harder and harder,
right?
Or something. And if you're asking what a single probe sees,
it might be easy. That's reasonable.
It'd be something like that.
Yeah. So.
What Steve is pointing out reminds me of this old problem of, we know how to write the abelian DBI in a full reparametrization invariant theory and manifestly covariant in the bulk. But when you consider many d-brains together, we know that the effective dynamics is controlled by Young-Mills. But from the perspective of the DBI action, reparametrizations of this non-abelian theory
Well, I think you'll get some complicated Young-Mills lumps, like some clump of brains, but it's still true. Like the center of mass coordinates of that clump of brains will still be simple.
No,
so,
I'm not saying. I mean, I'm just trying to rephrase what Steve has said in my way of understanding.
But I'm not sure you're talking about kind of ergodic, chaotic.
This is just talking about a more complicated.
I'm emphasizing
right.
The structure that you may need to do what you were just mentioning for a single probe reminds me of this sort of more classical problem of what is the analog of reparametrization in invariant theory for a non-abelian Young-Mills theory.
I don't know if it's the same. That would be describing a complicated probe, but I think it's, I don't know.
Yeah, well,
it's not.
Okay.
I mean, there's this issue of, like, in Poincaré coordinates, what happens when you start doing a lot of measurements? order n measurements or something like that, or UWN measurements, then things get complicated in any...
But are you thinking that actually it might be simpler than we thought? I mean, I guess maybe that's a way of asking Mike a related question. Do you think that you can straighten things out in a way that's simpler?
That's certainly our hope, yeah.
So you think maybe...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's a optimistic hope, but it seems likely to me, given...
Sorry, it's suggested by the black hole geometry that things are simple in falling observers.
I guess it's a question whether that's kind of a mean field statement or whether that's every single degree of freedom of the n squared. That's what confuses me.
Oh, yeah.
Give it a bow. Sorry.
It's interesting that the D-brain coordinate seems to retain its coherence in thermalization process. I mean,
right.
That's
right.
Being discussed here, where
that's right.
There's n squared other things that are all mixing up in a very complicated way.
Sometimes
it's certainly true that if you follow an infalling observer, any kind of object, that's clearly something that. That doesn't do anything dramatic, and you've shown that in detail.
So, I think so.
So I do.
What confused me about this discussion is everyone else seems to give the Schwarzschild observer the right. preferred status in the field theory.
Right.
Whereas one point about this simple picture is that it's kind of like a Janus picture. You can look at it in two different ways. If
right.
you just look at it in terms of the original Poincaré patch, then you're just talking about gauge theory on Minkowski space in the original, ADS-EMCC duality on, corresponding to the Poincaré patch. And this DBI action is just describing that, and there's, no need to transform to anything else if that's what you're interested in. So it's true that you want to get back to the Schwarzschild description, but it's not obvious that the Schwarzschild description is the primary one, especially since it is very complicated as you hit the horizon.
It depends what question you want to ask.
I mean, the Schwarzschild action goes back to the horizon and so on. So just for the gauge, gravity duality, neither of these is sort of the primary one.
Right. It's a question of what questions you want to ask. Are you an infalling observer? That's important.
Larry, the old story of Hiroshi 10 years ago of trying to move the end horizon by starting with the Poincaré patch and making a large conformal transformation, which is kind of forbidden within the Poincaré patch. Right? I mean,
is this the same thing in any sense? Is it?
It is very analogous to going beyond the Poincaré horizon by going from Poincaré to global coordinates. And that's something we do without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But,
right.
but it is, yeah, you're changing your time slicing when you do that. And so it is, it's very similar.
Okay. Thank you.